The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi, everybody. This is a famous rendering. You know, it's an elaboration on the Shroud of Turin, and I think maybe gives us the best idea of the physical appearance of Jesus, anyway.
Michael,
yes?
We are still waiting to see your screen.
Well, okay, thank you.
There it is. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. Okay, yes, so this Shroud of Turin, we just finished, I think, a very beautiful broadcast on Maundy Thursday, and we'll try to have that as ready for you as possible, you know, the Last Supper. It just so happens that all of this is, of course, you know, coming together with the second Aries full moon, which is really quite an amazing time, and I'll give you some speculations about this, but maybe this is the closest we can come for the outer appearance of the Master Jesus anyway, because it was the vehicle that was being used by the great Lord Maitreya. Of course, he has his own Maya Varupa and his own appearance, and it will not be this, but this gives us an idea of the solemnity of the times that we are dealing with. This is the idea here, and hi, everybody. We're here in the San Marcos Hotel, Crown Plaza, getting ready for the conference. Hope so many of you can come, or if not, you know, attend and through the broadcasts. It'd be lovely to see you here in person, if possible. I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule. Okay, these are the ideas. And we have some very, very strong first-ray implications here. Mars probably has some ultimate kind of first-ray monad, along with a fifth ray. And Uranus definitely has the first-ray monad, along with the Earth, which is stated as existing. So the only two monads, if you search carefully, and excuse me for anything that comes in on the side there, if you search carefully, it's not obvious, but Uranus has the first-ray monad, and the Earth, too. And, you know, he says it in such a way that you have to dig and to understand. But Mercury, no. Mercury is more along the soft line in the soul, and it's along the mental line when it comes to the monadic influence. So this is a very mental sign, yes, but also a very assertive sign. But, and you know, I think when we look up here, I'm not going to say too much about this because I did last time. We have a very Martian kind of assertiveness. It's not, I would say, the higher aspect at all of what Aries can be, especially at a blue moon. And I'm going to try to make some speculations about that because everybody's got a different idea about what a blue moon really is. But back here, we do have the magician, and that is Mercury. So there's a hint at the rulership by Mercury, esoterically, in this Joffre painting. Of course, he's done wonderful work and so inspiring for all of us. But it's not probably what we want to emphasize at this time. I think, excuse me. What we want to emphasize is something quite different. It's the relationship of the great solar angel to the to its projection, the human being, and the straight line through the monad. So basically, what you're seeing here in one of Francis Donald's renderings is the Great Bear. And when it comes to the one about whom naught may be said, you know, I sometimes think it's the one about whom naught may be thought, even. Well, you know, we're very far from that. It's simply a mental concept. But we do know that these seven stars, and actually there's eight, Mizar and Alcor, kind of a visual double going right in here. This is called the cosmic Manu. That is a term that Stephen Pugh, a rheologist and astrologer, devised for it, the cosmic Manu. And it represents the seven head centers in the one about whom, in the head of the one about whom naught may be said. So it's an amazingly high constellation, and that's where it seems to support the first ray of Aries. But we're going to look at something quite different in Aries. You know, what is a blue moon anyway? Well, you know, you're going to get all of these different ideas. Some of them will actually have to do with the moon apparently turning blue, which it does very rarely due to certain atmospheric conditions and certain particulates, you know, certain tiny little particles that are in the atmosphere, and it gives the, sometimes after a big forest fire or something of that nature, the moon will turn blue. But the usual definition for the blue moon is not the one we're using, and that's if in a calendar month you have two full moons. You know, and it certainly helps to have a kind of month in which there are 31 days. But you can understand that they would be in two different signs altogether. And that's not what we're looking at. We're going to look at a different kind of, at least I'm just offering this as a speculation, because I don't think there's anything definitive written about it. We do know that, you know, when we have a new moon, we have kind of a Shambhala type of impact. And usually the, and also a very practical impact. So a lot of work with servers, in the new group of world servers, is brought forth at the new moon. And by the way, we'll be celebrating, interestingly enough, a new moon here in Taurus during the pre-conference, and have a meditation accordingly. The full moon in Taurus, the Waysak, will be occurring after the conference is completed, and people will have a chance to get home and participate in their normal Waysak groups and so forth. So what we have here is two full moons, but how we're going to look at them is that they're both in the same sign and not in the same month. So, you know, in the very beginning, and what that will really mean is that the first full moon is going to occur quite close to the ingress, the entry of the sun into the sign. And that at the very, very beginning of, let's say, the Aries period, which it did. As a matter of fact, there were only 4 hours, I think, separating the ingress into Aries from the full moon. And actually, of course, the ingress comes first. Then, you know, 30 degrees later, just as the sun is about to leave the sign, which is Aries in this case, then you have the second of the full moons in that sign. And that is... I guess you could say it has some special quality, because you're not going to get more than one of them a year, and sometimes you might not even get one of them, you know, one of these blue moon periods. So, you know, you look up what's a blue moon, and everybody's got an idea, and I would just like to suggest that we focus on the color blue. Maybe it's not by accident that color is being used. Now, you know, there was a tremendous emphasis in the Maundy Thursday broadcast, which I hope you get to listen to. It's just beautiful. On the sacrificial nature of the hierarchy, and also the sacrificial nature of Aries. You know, we can say Aries is the monad. Yes, you know, Aries, Pluto, Shambhala. Aries is the will to create, connected with the third aspect. Yes, it is. But from another perspective, because it has all this, you know, mental activity, and there's so much Mercury creativeness involved with it. But from another perspective, it is what the Tibetan calls the lamb slain from the foundations of the world. The lamb slain from the foundations of the world. Now, there's all these big cycles. When were the foundations of the world? Well, you know, we have great periods. We can call them precessional periods, not just of 2160 years, or maybe rounded off 2500 years. We have other things. We have the 25,000 year Great Platonic Cycle, and you put 12 of those together, and depending on how you do the math, it'll come out either 300,000 years as a cycle, or it will come out in a different way, more like 250,000 years, which fits with the usual, you know, 2,500, 250. Interestingly, Stephen Pugh speculates that that's a fourth ray cycle, and that the number 25 is connected with humanity in the fourth ray, and I think there's a, you know, good reason to think that he's correct on that. So, but there's another kind of cycle. Now, we just came out of a 25,000-year Aries cycle, maybe about 27,000 years ago, something like that. We're in the middle of a Pisces cycle of 25,000 years, roughly. Actually, it comes closer to 25, almost 26,000. I don't have the exact figure. And then preceding the Pisces cycle, in which we're still involved, came a larger Platonic year cycle. Now, is that the, you know, foundations of the world? Well, that was only 25,000 years ago, 27,000 years ago, maybe. Because very soon we're going to go into the 25,000-year Platonic Aquarius cycle. DK says that we cannot determine that with our mathematics and with our astronomical knowledge, but it is coming, and it's coming soon. And maybe the great age of Aquarius, or the lesser age of Aquarius, will come first, and then will come this great big cycle. But there's still another type of cycle. And, you know, maybe astronomers think that, okay, it's maybe it doesn't exist. But the occultists say that our sun and the seven solar systems, being one of the seven solar systems, and many other stars which are less noteworthy, revolve around the Pleiades every 250,000 years. And, you know, so a 250,000-year cycle just came to an end at the time of the Christ in Palestine. And if we trace that back, we might find that these huge cycles also have to do with some sign of the zodiac. Maybe if you put together 250,000-year cycles, you're either going to get 3 million years, which takes us right back into mid-Atlantean times, or maybe you'll get 2,500,000 years, also taking us back into Atlantean times. And it may be, you know, DK talks about in the Aries chapter, and maybe in the Sagittarius chapter, about events occurring in the night of time. Well, that was a long time ago. And how many of those cycles do we have to go back to in order to find the Aries cycle? We're not exactly sure where we are now when it comes to the 250,000-year cycle. We just know that it's ended and that a new one is beginning. And if it is associated with a zodiacal sign, we are not sure which zodiacal sign it might be. But way, way back, you know, millions of years we have been here. Now, what is this lamb slain from the foundations of the world. You know, Aries can also be associated not just with brilliant red, but with the midnight blue of sacrifice. So this sacrificial tendency has been with us a very long time. And this may be at the blue moon, at every blue moon, of course, but Aries, you know, has particularly that idea of accept a seed or a corn falleth in the ground and bring forth fruit, you know, then the task is incomplete. So all of us have to be sacrificed in our outer life. We all have to be immersed in that which must be redeemed, namely the lower 18 or 21 subplanes of our cosmic physical plane. And we have to bring forth the fruit of the soul. We have to grow into the seven-leaved plant, the Saptaparna. We have to become the spirit again, immersed in matter. We have to redeem matter. So there's something about Aries which has to do with really plunging sacrificially into the depths of matter. Remember that it's also ruled by the seventh ray, the depths of matter. And remember, too, that the Manu and his department, first ray, is very much responsible for the condition of the form and for building strong enough forms to hold the spirit. So the emphasis here is upon sacrifice. Just as the solar angel in this diagram has given of itself for millions of years so that man may truly live, so the fourth kingdom of nature may truly live and ascend into the place where life exists and not just the remnants of a previous cycle, which is like being suffocated. It's like death, you know. To be always subject to the third aspect of divinity is like a kind of death, and we're growing out of that finally. So I just want to say that the blue moon, you know, at least from my perspective, at this point, is a way of bringing out the sacrificial love potentials of any sign of the zodiac. Now, you know, we could go around the zodiac and say, well, what would a blue moon in Taurus be, you know? And let's just say there is this great light of wisdom which illuminates all things. And in Gemini, you have a second ray sign, and let's just say that successfully through sacrifice, always through sacrifice, the various parts of creation are drawn together in right relationship. And in Cancer, there's the sacrificial protection of the life aspect within the form. And in Leo, there's this tremendous heart, like Tuya was mentioning, you know, Aslan in the Narnia Chronicles, a lion who was a Christ figure. You know, so there is really the sacrificial heart and not just the ruler. You know, Leo is also a first ray sign. You could, you know, in Virgo, you know, the sacrifice can be the great love of the mother, which endlessly and enduringly helps to raise the Christ child and to bring out of all of the third aspect of divinity the expression of the second ray of love to wisdom. And in, am I going to go around all of these? I don't know. I'm just, you know, just making some suggestions. And the blue moon in Libra might be a perfected loving relationship, and the blue moon in Scorpio would be the achievement of the Buddhi, in which all things are related to each other in pure reason, and, you know, you've conquered all that is low and are in a condition of complete Buddhic love. And in Sagittarius, the whole idea of the hidden vision of divinity is extremely strong, and the great science of relationships is revealed to you. And in Capricorn, well, it's another sacrificial sign, isn't it? You know, a blue moon in Capricorn is not emphasizing, to my way of thinking, rays 1, 3, and 7, which are the major rays of Capricorn and will, of course, be emphasized. But the whole idea, again, of going into the depths of matter, and they're working out every possible karmic relationship until love is revealed. And, you know, the love that is seen from the height of the mountaintop, the love, divine love, that is seen from that point. And if we maybe get a blue moon in Aquarius, emphasizing the sacrificial aspect, you are in everything. You are universal, and you're suffering with the least and exalting with the greatest. So it's an all-pervasive idea of being the one who is experiencing in everything and perfects all relationships. And in Pisces, it's fairly easy. Another second-ray sign. And let's just say the blue moon in Pisces is really the consummation of love on this planet. This is the second-ray solar system of the second-ray soul on our planet, and that love has to be consummated, and it's going to be an indigo consummation in this solar system. In the next solar system, okay, we're going to go into our first-ray monad, but not yet. So from my angle, I am emphasizing the sacrificial nature of the sign that is presently being celebrated. Now, we're going to be celebrating that, you know, at, well, kind of like 9:30 GMT. Tuya, what day? I've lost it. Is it tomorrow? 19th. Yeah, it's the 19th, yeah. Okay, the 19th. And, of course, for those of us in Arizona, we'll start the program at 2:30 in the morning and wherever you happen to be. But as DK said, and then the actual GMT blue moon full is at 11:12 and 3 seconds. Okay, GMT. So you know, we'll be going there for maybe an hour and a half or an hour and 40 minutes before the actual moment of the exact blue moon. But he said, look, you know, well, it fits. He says, make the sacrifice, because at that moment, the door opens and possibilities emerge for you and for all life that do not emerge at any other time. Great energies are released. Be there for them. I remember in the old days, used to drive out in the middle of the night, you know, there was no internet or whatever, and go to an exact moment, a full moon meditation. Could be 2:30 in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, didn't make any difference. And, you know, so here we are, all of us being asked to be present at that. And it will be a broadcast at our usual live link broadcast off of YouTube. So I think you get the idea, you know, what I'm driving at here. Here's another one of Francis's beautiful renderings. And again, we see monad soul and personality. Now, the main thing is, of course, that the great second-ray generic soul influenced the personality. All of this supervised by the monad. But when you think about the monad, it's extremely sacrificial. Lord of ceaseless, persevering devotion. A lord of sacrifice. That's what we are, essentially. And we have plunged down into the lower five planes. You know, what would I mean by that? Let's see if I can find anything, something here that will allow me to, well, I'll tell you what, I can see it here if it's going to allow me to do this. Yeah, okay. See, you know what the monad does? It's really, here it is, you know, diagrammatically, and it's plunged down, not just into the lower 21 subplanes, not just into the lower 18 subplanes, but all the way even into the worlds of superhuman evolution. Beyond the atomic plane, we're not going to be talking so much about humanity per se, or at least about the fourth creative hierarchy. We will, as DK says, of the Chohans of the sixth initiation, they are no longer men as are the masters. But long, long time ago, we went forth even while staying at home, and that's the great paradox. How do you go forth and stay at home at the same time? But that's, you know, what happened, I do believe. we went down into this great Brahmic area of 35 subplanes. And we left our true home behind because we are a lord of ceaseless, persevering devotion. So that when you look at something like what Francis has here, the monad is a great being of sacrifice. And then a soul is built up around the monadic projection with the help of the solar angel. And then the soul itself sends forth various personalities which have to be influenced by these higher energies. And when you look at Aries, you think of it, it's got ray 1 and ray 7. So from the highest to the lowest, it is effective, and it's all for the purpose of sacrifice. Sacrifice, as Master Moria, a great first ray Chohan, has said, when have you ever become less through sacrifice? You know, it makes you pause and really think there. That you can tell I'm improvising here, and I'm having a little bit different type of approach than my usual going through the normal meditation, because I think, you know, that in the question of the blue moon, we need a way of thinking about it, you know, that is not just prosaic, not just tied to the calendar. It's something about the cycle of completion. Now, when you think about it, you know, you go from one sign to another every full moon, and you're building up your causal body year after year, decade after decade, life after life. You're building it up by working with the various signs of the zodiac and their rays. However, it is also possible to have a slight unit of completion. And that is what a blue moon, in the way we are considering it, actually is. We begin with Aries, as we did about a month ago, and we end with Aries, and there's something fulfilled. You get to see something about what you planted, what you intended, you know, how you asserted yourself. I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule. Okay, that's a big assertion. I, the monad, come forth, and I plunge down into the higher mind, and from the higher mind where the soul is found, I rule. Okay, so that is how we can look at that statement from a very high point of view. I come forth, and from the plane of my eye, the monad, come forth. I create the soul with the help of the solar angel. I rule the lower worlds like a good Leo, you know, and there bring the will of the Father down into the lower planes. Well, okay, so, and all of that at great sacrifice. And what is Sanat Kumara called? He's called the great sacrifice. So, you know, the type of sacrifice that he has put forth, we cannot conceive. We can barely conceive what the Christ is. And when we do, it's like an earth-shattering experience. And then just imagine trying to conceive of the sacrifice, of the great sacrifice, Sanat Kumara, who, by the way, is identified with Aries. Well, really, he's identified with all the signs, you know. But he is the youth of endless summers. And that particularly is his identification with Aries. So, all right, so I've said a few things about this. Everything's going to be different now. I'm not going to go through the standard meditation. I'm going to kind of make it up as I go along. And I'm going to ask that we consider whether or our role within the Lamb slain from the foundations of the world, meaning the great consciousness being aspect that is slain by being deprived through emanation of its true home and its true life, as it plunges down as the prodigal son eventually, sacrificially to redeem and elevate the lower lives. Obviously, we are being redeemed and elevated, we little emanations, and we owe that also to those who have not come as far as we have come. So let's see what to do here. Oh, by the way, you know, this is interesting. Here in Chandler, Arizona, I want to just say that we, it's right on the theme, you know, because we're talking about Mountain Standard Time, and it's going to be like 11 in the morning with 12 minutes and 3 seconds when it comes to GMT. But right here where we are, we have Pisces rising with Neptune, the highest ruler of Pisces in a certain way, right on the ascendant, and Jupiter on the midheaven. So the capacity for great vision. And you notice over here how the sun is still in Aries and it is opposed to the earth, heliocentrically considered. And, you know, therefore, that shows you your blue, that shows you your blue moon. But there's some very deep consideration of sacrifice, which I think we can bring through and contemplate as we, you know, have with Tuya later, starting at 9:30 GMT on the 19th, as we have the exact full moon, blue moon service meditation. So I was really amazed to see this, you know, right from where we're broadcasting it. I won't get into the Sabian degrees and all that, but just to say it's most interesting to me how this all came up. All right. Now, the theme of sacrifice. Okay, so let's see if there's anything else here that I was thinking of. Well, I think I've said all these things. When you have a blue moon, you know, let's just say that the first has first ray implications and the second will have more second ray implications. And I'm not even going to put up a meditation the way I usually do. I'm just going to kind of improvise something here for us and see how we go, and hopefully it will be a preparation for us. It's in the middle of the morning, but let's say for tomorrow, the 19th, hope you'll be able to join us for that, unless you have, you know, some other commitments. But whatever your commitments, make sure that at the exact moment you are there. Okay. So I'll just leave this one here, I think, because it really portrays the great intervention of the great second ray solar angel. You know, they've been trained on Sirius, who is the cosmic Christ, for us at least. You know, there's so many cosmic Christs, but not the universal Christ, the cosmic Christ, and carries a tremendous second ray because probably like Venus, the monad of Sirius is the second ray, and a fifth ray soul, you know, and a sixth ray submonad, and just like Venus, I would say. Venus is the planet that most represents Sirius, at least within our solar system. So we get a very strong Syrian representation here from what Francis has provided for us, and there's a great cross there and the appropriate color blue. So I'm just going to leave that up as we meditate. Okay, so let's just, wherever we are geographically, reach out to each other. First, as soul-infused personalities, at least, you know, partially so. And and we take into thought the members of the new group of world servers. They don't necessarily have to be occultists. As a matter of fact, the majority are not students of occultism the way we are, but okay. All over the world, these points of brighter light, we're in communion with them too. From our soul to their soul, it's all one soul. And the soul within us and our personality reaches out to their soul-infused state. It's a unity. And to all men and women of goodwill, they may not yet be the active servers, but they are thinking in the right direction and their desires are for the good, and they help, definitely, all over the world. And really, to all humanity, in the body, out of the body, it's all one soul. It's all one consciousness with many eyes. You know, the mythical character, the Argus with 10,000 eyes. So it's all one consciousness, it's all one being. And if even once a day one can have that flash come into one's consciousness that it's all one being, not just words, but, you know, to have the flash of realization, that is something. Harry should help with that, in as much as its number is one. And the monad knows that. So all human beings, like or dislike, it doesn't make any difference. It's all one being. And the climactic mantram for this series of mantrams on the second ray, naught is but me. Naught is but me, the large, not the personal me, no. The larger me, or I, with which one learns to identify, because one is that. So practice that until, whatever your ray may be, until when you say, not is but me, it's a real thing. And that requires that layer after layer of veils be removed, or the scales have to drop from one's eyes. and then contemplation will be real. The subject and object will be united, and there will be real identification, which is what Christ wants to teach us. And, you know, he's on the second ray, and the greatest statement regarding identification, says the Tibetan, is in John 17. Which it pays to reread about how Christ is in the Father, and the Father in him, and the disciples in him, and he in them, and the Father in the disciples, and they in them. It's a great triangle. The Father, the Son, and all the many disciples of Christ in the community of Christ, the great church, universal and triumphant of Christ. Now, let's just say the bridge to the higher worlds is seen in all of its seven colors. You can almost see it here in this diagram. You know, it's like a great shaft of light. It leads to the solar angel, but also eventually into the triad and the monad. Just get a little water here. And in that great bridge, there are colors that stand out, you know, go into rays and initiations and study for 100 pages, as we do in the Moria Federation, the way of building the Antikorana, you know, and see how we can enter those higher worlds. But for the moment, indigo blue is the color, mainly coloring the seven-colored bridge. So here's this bridge reaching into the triad, as here we see. Bridge is complete in this diagram, and it's reaching. It's triangular, it's reaching to the bridge. The three are one. The three are one. Three and one, one and three. And so what we're going to do, you know, I'm abbreviating everything a little. We absorb the energy of the soul, the rows of petals, every row, and the jewel and the lotus too, into that area of projection on the fourth subplane of the mental plane. And a certain amount of soul infusion is generated. And we will project, then we'll use the second ray word of power. I see the greatest light. So we'll sound the Om on a second ray note, the G. And interiorly we say, I see the greatest light, three times. Om. see the greatest light. And that should imaginatively open the group to influence from the triad and from Shambhala purpose a little bit. We can't really project our consciousness into Shambhala. We can't really even reach the subplanes of the Atman and Buddhic plane, because those are the first subplane and second are places where even the master has not polarized. But in that direction. And down can come the influence of the higher realms, bringing light, wisdom, love, power, will, identification, and we usually gather ourselves together. And with the shortening golden pathway, we enter as a point of light into the indigo disc, where we imaginatively meet the consciousness of Master DK. And we become as if outposts in his consciousness. During the 12 hours before the full moon, you know the story. We're more or less within that period. The master observes the approach of the group and assists them in their approach to the inner mysteries and the higher states. And what we'll do now, you know, as if we are outposts, or at least elevated by the presence of Master DK's consciousness, we're going to encounter the ruling planets of Aries, but this time a little differently. We all know something about Mars, Mercury, and Uranus. And the question will be on the color blue, sacrifice. Here is this red planet Mars, really orangish more in color, and already people are imagining themselves to go there. Maybe it means they put foot upon those tendencies, just as they have done with the moon, and will still go and do. But suppose you were to use these powerful, assertive, brave, encountering, persistent energies of Mars to bring about some sacrificial attitude in your life, some greater expression of sacrifice. How would you use Mars? How would you use the Martian beam to promote this sense of sacrifice? With its sixth ray, its probable fifth ray and first ray, how would you use it in your life? Let's ponder a bit. And if we were to bring that Martian energy into our groups for sacrificial purposes, what difference would it make? What could the group do with it? Let's sound a note on the... Well, you know, it's usually a red note, but I'll just keep it on the blue note since the theme is sacrifice. And breathe that Mars into our groups for sacrificial purposes. You know how many times the brave people in the world have saved the day at great expense to themselves? And maybe if we do it correctly, we will have groups that are braver to do what has to be done, even though it may mean difficulty and even total self-sacrifice. Yes. Now let's look at Mercury, quite close to the Sun, fourth ray soul, third ray, fifth ray monad, my speculation, much third ray, great planet of mentality and intuition. Suppose you could fasten on to that mercurial beam and you could reason very well, and you would have a more than an occasional flash of pure reason, how all things are related to each other and the why and the wherefore. How would you be willing in your life to use that kind of energy for sacrificial purposes? And all I can say is, as a little hint, just think of the Tibetan. Let's ponder a bit. And surely we must realize that Mercury is a bringer of light from the highest to the lowest, and it is also promoting the upreach of the lowest to toward the understanding of the highest. And in our groups, the Tibetan is Mercury, the Tibetan is Gemini. And there's a great ageless wisdom. What would our groups do? Again, we'll sound the blue note, which subsumes all the others. You can ponder that as we move closer to the full moon. What happens if our groups of students of occultism spend themselves giving forth the light of the ageless wisdom on their own level, just as DK has done? Think of how much more light there would be in humanity, how much more knowledgeable humanity would be, what a truer vision would occur. And finally, Uranus, if we can reach that far, the god of the lightning, the great violet seventh ray, but something deeper on the first ray line monadically. And let's just say that the great love and wisdom of deity has become seven great archetypes on the monadic plane and three great archetypes on the logoic plane. And Uranus is in charge of all of them. It's the archetype of life. Think about your own life. And one, what would render it truer to the archetype that you are on monadic and logoic levels? What would render it true to type? What is that type? What is your true name in those higher regions? Uranus is the god of purpose, the god of electric will, the home of electric fire. It's what we're intended to be. As above, so we are intended to be that below. And so are our groups. We'll just sound the Om as we imagine the archetypalizing of our individual and group life. The Heavenly One comes to Earth. We are a design in heaven. Every one of us is part of a greater design, part of a greater and greater design. And to fulfill the heavenly design, this is the task of Uranus. And Aries asserts this. What sacrifices are needed in our life to do this? What sacrifices in order to become spiritually authentic, archetypal, without fear of conditions in the lower worlds? So think about it. Supported by the consciousness of Master Decay, think about it. What sacrifices are we willing to make for bravery and courage? Mars. What sacrifices to become a truly mentally and intuitively illumined one? Mercury. What sacrifices are we willing to make to become the archetypal one, Uranus? The meaning of sacrifice, of course, to make sacred, to make archetypal, to make illumined, to see of the fruits of courage and bravery. And finally, to become a unit of love, wisdom, whatever our ray may be, within the solar logos. These are high ideals, but towards the fulfillment of this kind of monadic idealism, the entire evolutionary process of man is directed. So as we move towards the full moon, let us contemplate in the sacrificial mode, and we'll do it more later, of course, with the actual moment of the full moon, and you can, of course, think of it during the some hours that remain here, maybe 14 hours or so. I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule. I, the monad, come forth. I sacrificially descend into the five worlds of Brahma. I take my place upon the higher mental plane as the jewel in the lotus, and from this plane of soul, assisted by the solar angel, I rule the spiritual development of my further projection, the personality. I come forth in sacrifice. as a Lord of ceaseless persevering devotion, and from the plane of mind, I rule. I, the One, come forth and become the unified many and an aspect of the unified many in the soul realm, and then descend redemptively into ignorance in order to lift those who do not know they are unified into the light of unity, universality, and oneness. I come forth, and from the plane of mind, I rule. And my rulership is not personal. It is as a member of the divine plan, as the substance of the divine plan. Aries, recognition and work with the divine plan. Through sacrifice. oneness, unity, multiplicity. Such is the sacrificial journey of the monad, so closely identified with Aries as the One. So keep thinking along these lines, adapt the principles to your own life and to your group life. And at this time of the blue moon, take new courage. Be filled with new light. And attempt to understand the archetypal life which lies behind and within everything you as a person seem to be doing. There is a grand design at the root of everything, and it is purpose. Your purpose within the great purpose. As this deep midnight blue settles across humanity and instructs all human beings eventually that they and humanity as a whole is the Lamb slain from the foundations of the world. We will close with a great invocation. And think of this as a great formula for the redemption of humanity and the redemption of our planet, which has undertaken that particular role as heir to so many of the energies of the previous solar system, which need the redemption to bring it in line with the principles of the second solar system. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. from the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, friends. It's a powerful time now. We rarely get to work with the will to fulfillment and see a complete cycle completed in a month. So think back about your intentions and think about the fruit of your intentions and think about being part of the will of the great sacrifice and his purpose and his plan. Sanat Kumara, his purpose and his plan. Think about how to bring the archetype into your life so you will automatically be part of Sanat Kumara's purpose and plan, albeit on a much lower level, but we can do what we can do. So maybe we see you a little later, about, 12 hours from now, something like that, where we'll have a broadcast and we'll get into the exact moment of the Aries blue moon. Thank you for being here and for meditating. It's a solemn time. Let's keep our inner silence, as Tuya was suggesting. You know, the silence, in the silence is the synthesis, and this is a great sign of oneness and synthesis. Maybe we can get a flashing glimpse of the wholeness of things. And that is a great reward to see, even for a split second, the wholeness of things. I come forth, and from the plane of mind, I rule. Lots of love, many blessings, and see you soon. Bye-bye.